You are Locked On Texans, your daily Houston Texans podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to a Locked On crossover. I'm Robert Land from the Houston Sports Talk Podcast and Locked On Texans, along with co-host Brian Patterson from houseofhouston.com and Locked On Texans with Cody Rourke. For most of you, you know who he is over on the Broncos side, Locked On Broncos. And talk a little bit of Broncos and Texans. We're going to start off just talking with you, Cody, about the Broncos. And from the Texans standpoint, it's pretty interesting because these two teams have been tied for years together with a lot of transactions. Rick Smith used to deal with the Broncos a lot and pick up some Broncos players. But now it's the ultimate because you guys got Case Keenum. So what's the word there? What do you guys think about that?
Well, and I can tell you this, you know, thanks for having me here on this crossover show. Love doing these things with you guys and excited to join you and Brian for this. You know, Case Keenum, you know, I tell you what, there's a lot of excitement right now in Dove Valley regarding Case Keenum. And it's because the Denver Broncos for the last two seasons have had nothing but headaches at the quarterback position now. Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, and even Brock Osweiler. You guys know a little bit about that as well. It's almost kind of been this dynamic back and forth. Started off in Denver. Ended up in Houston. That didn't work out. And he ended up back in Denver after being traded to Cleveland. And at this point, we're all full circle here. The Denver Broncos went through three quarterbacks in 2017 with Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, and Brock Osweiler. Now they have no dilemma heading into 2018 with Case Keenum. And I tell you what, I'm very excited about Case Keenum's addition because, one, and I'm sure you guys will, you know, agree with me on this, he is a very good leader. He, you know, he's got great body language, great leadership personalities, and that's definitely something that's evident ever since he, you know, was in Houston, and obviously he went to Los Angeles at that point, and that's been a trait in him that I've noticed for quite some time. And as soon as Broncos OTAs began, he came out to the meeting. He said, you know, I'm not necessarily that leader for them right now. I want to have the right, you know, I want to come out here and earn the right to lead these guys, and that was huge for a lot of guys in the locker room. Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, a lot of guys who have openly expressed in the media that they've been upset a little bit with the production at quarterback and just the consistency, because in order to be successful in the NFL, you have to have a good quarterback that can get you the ball. And I truly believe that Case Keenum is that guy that can get the ball to guys like Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, and obviously new additions in Courtland Sutton, guy who played over at SMU. So you guys have seen the Texas side of things down there as well. And, you know, to be honest with you, he's an upbeat guy, and his body language is always positive. To me, that's one revealing sign. Not a lot of people will talk about body language, but I'm a football coach. One thing I always look at is a guy's body language, a guy's ability to lead, and a guy's ability to stay composed under pressure. And on film, when I go back and I watch film on Case Keenum back in Minnesota, even in LA at times, one thing I've noticed from him is he does a good job of staying composed under pressure. And that's something that the Denver Broncos have desperately needed at quarterback since obviously Peyton Manning was the guy. So very, very excited about Case Keenum. And I know from what we were talking about, you guys have a lot of good things to say about him as well.
Brian loves him because he's a U of H guy, and Brian's a U of H guy. So, Brian, I'll let you take it.
Watched him all the way from, you know, his first game at University of Houston all the way up until now. So I've been following him a long time. So, you know, if I've watched this guy come back from a huge deficit to beat Texas Tech. This was back in 2009, where it basically put the U of H football program back on the map. I mean, Texas Tech at the time was highly coveted. They were, you know, on their way, and then we toppled them over. I mean, that was one of the last times that at Robertson Stadium, you know, people rushed the field. So it was awesome. And I finally got my opportunity as of late. The last time I got to rush the field, which is now TDECU Stadium, was when they won the American Athletic Conference Championship over Temple. So it was kind of an orderly rush on the field, but they just let everybody come on. And it was really fun. And I took a lot of great pictures. It's just such a thrill when you get to do something like that. And I know I'm kind of meandering a bit, but I just wanted to talk about that. You know, of course, now it's a different era. But with Case Keenum, you're going to get a gamer, you're going to get a baller, and you're going to get a shot caller. Everybody talks about his size, that he's not tall enough. He can't see over the top, but he knows how to find his guys, and the guy's got a hell of an arm. He's going to get it to He's been throwing, you know, to all kinds of receivers throughout his career, and he has got some damn good weapons. I mean, Demaryius Thomas, for example. So, you know, he's going to be hooking up with him a lot. And I really do think that with Case, you know, he didn't come up big, of course, in that final game. That was a mistake. We understand that, but that shouldn't, you know, shed a huge light on his career and what he had done up until that particular point. So I really do see him doing great things for you guys, and I'm rooting for him, except when we play each other this season. So I'm really looking forward to it. I wish him nothing but the best with his success. And which leads me to another question I have for you, Cody. And I don't know if Gary Kubiak had some influence on getting Case Keenum there. He had influence in making sure that he came on the team as an undrafted free agent, you know, to the Texans. He got into the NFL on a Gary Kubiak coach team. But tell me more about his title. He is the senior personnel advisor. What is he doing? What does he do? Is that just like a title? Does he fly in, you know, during game week and comes back to Houston? Does he live out in Denver? How much work are they giving him over there? Because I know they're concerned about his health.
Well, Gary Kubiak, you know, the funny thing about him is, you know, he had a phenomenal influence in terms of luring Case Keenum to Denver. And it was an easy decision for Case Keenum going back through his history. But like you said, the title of Gary Kubiak, that was always in question. He's definitely a senior personnel advisor for the Denver Broncos scouting department. But he's also transitioning into a role as one of John Elway's right-hand men in the organization in more of an administrative role. He's going to assist in a lot of different things. He's not going to really influence necessarily any of the play calling or anything of that nature. But he has a lot of decision and obviously some of the decision-making processes that the Denver Broncos have, you know, leading up in the NFL draft. And even heading into free agency, Gary Kubiak has a very, very big voice in that room with John Elway.
I'll ask you about the big picture with the Broncos in just a bit, because I'm trying to figure out where you think you guys are at the moment. But I just want to remind our listeners really quick, if you're enjoying Locked On Texans or Locked On Broncos, tell your friends, let them know they can find us on iTunes, Spotify, and most anywhere you're going to find your favorite podcast. If you'd like to check out more podcasts from our national Locked On Network, go to LockedOnSports.com, our new Locked On Network website. The Locked On Network gets 2.5 million downloads per month. We're hip. We're happening. We got podcasts for nearly every NFL and NBA team, our national Locked On NFL Draft and Locked On NFL shows as well. It's LockedOnSports.com. That's LockedOnSports.com. All right, Cody, so you got a quarterback now. I don't think he's as much a top five or top 10 guy. He's closer to that game management type quarterback. That's kind of where I feel like Case is. I don't know what you think about that, but does that mean the Broncos with the defense that they have are a Super Bowl contender? You guys think now you're a legitimate Super Bowl contender in what I think is a really washed up or watered down AFC?
You know, it's been tough. You know, this is the question after the Broncos dismantled the Carolina Panthers in the 2015 Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50. You know, Peyton Manning didn't have a stellar game throwing the ball, but one thing Peyton Manning did very well in that game, despite it being a year for him where he absolutely struggled in Gary Kubiak's system, was he managed the game in Super Bowl 50 very well. The Denver Broncos, you know, heading into that, you know, the formula was thought that heading into 2016 after Peyton Manning was gone was that Trevor Siemian, all he had to do was come in and manage the game, let the Broncos defense be dominant. And obviously the run game has to be efficient, obviously have a decent field goal touchdown, red zone efficiency. Well, that didn't really work out for the Denver Broncos. Now, heading into 2017, it was almost the same approach. The Denver Broncos defense, you know, Wade Phillips departed. The Denver Broncos took the job in L.A., huge job for him, and they went with Joe Woods, a young and up-and-coming rising defensive coordinator entering his second year here in 2018. Well, at that point, the Denver Broncos defense struggled a lot of it because the offense overall struggled more so in 2017 than it did in 2016. And a lot of it was field position. Turnovers played a major part. You know, when your offense is giving up maybe sometimes 7 points a game in terms of a pick six or fumble recovery for a score, or special teams unit, which ranked 30th in the National Football League, you had your, you know, returner Isaiah McKenzie dropping punts and all of a sudden teams recovering it. Field position was a very, very big problem and an enemy for the Denver Broncos defense. Now, they still finished the NFL in terms as number three overall defense behind Minnesota and Jacksonville in 2017. However, they gave up more points per game than those teams combined. And a lot of that's attributed to special teams and the offensive side of the ball. And they did have a little bit more of a, breakdowns in coverage, more so than they've had in previous years, which was definitely something Broncos fans weren't accustomed to seeing with Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr. You know, the teams picked on safeties quite a bit. I feel like the Denver Broncos overall heading into 2018, I think they've addressed some of those areas. Obviously, they traded Aqib Talib to Los Angeles. That was a huge move for the Denver Broncos. Saves them a lot of money in the cap. He goes back to Wade Phillips. Now, Bradley Roby transitions to the number two corner, and Chris Harris Jr. bumps to the outside. Well, we've primarily seen him as the inside slot cover corner in the National Football League, and that's one of the toughest positions to play. Now the question is, who's going to step up at the number three cornerback spot for the Denver Broncos? That remains to be seen. We'll see that here in training camp. But to answer your question, I know I kind of got on there a little tangent there a little bit, but to answer your question, the Denver Broncos don't need a guy to really be spectacular on offense. He doesn't have to put up 55 touchdowns like we saw from Peyton Manning in 2013. If Case Keenum can stay around and throw maybe even 28 touchdowns, have about 10 interceptions, and the running game for the Denver Broncos is efficient with whoever's going to be running the ball, that's another question. That we'll get to here in a little bit. But if they can run the ball, manage the game, and reduce turnovers, I think the Denver Broncos have a very, very good shot at getting back to the postseason in the playoffs, because the AFC West right now on paper, it's kind of up in the air a little bit. I think the Los Angeles Chargers are a very, very talented and dangerous team in the division. They rose. They won 9 out of their last 12 games last year after starting off 0-4. So the Chargers have a lot of talent on defense and even on offense now more so than ever. And I think the AFC is improving a little bit. You have Jacksonville, who's going to be tough. Right now you look at Pittsburgh and it's all questionable. Who knows? And then the Patriots, obviously, you know, they get in every year, unfortunately. But you have some teams rising in the AFC, and I think Houston is a prime example of one of those teams that we saw take the next step towards getting to a consistent and dominant performance, and I think Deshaun Watson really energized that. But we'll talk about that when I ask you guys all about the Houston Texans. But to answer your question, I think the Denver Broncos, they don't need a guy that's flashy, spectacular, or over the top. I think they need a guy that's a leader and that can manage the game and lead them down on effective scoring drives. And I think if they do that, I think the Denver Broncos have a very good shot at returning to the playoffs.
Did Talib have anything left in the tank when you dealt him, do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think Talib still has a good 2 to 3 years left in the National Football League. Now, the thing with Aqib Talib last year, and he actually did an interview today with Peter King of Monday Morning Quarterback, and he also spoke to the fact about, you know, what's going on with Denver, and he kind of spoke that, you know, Denver needs to stop getting rid of all their dogs, as you said, all the guys that are, you know, they got rid of TJ Ward at the beginning of the offseason after training camp for the Denver Broncos in 2017. So that was a big thing for guys like Aqib Talib and the no-fly zone. They were very upset and they were very vocal about, you know, getting rid of guys that have some strong leadership ability, as they did with TJ Ward. He's very outspoken in that regard. Now Aqib Talib, very emotional guy, very passionate guy. He was he still had it for the Denver Broncos, and I think he was a little more distracted in 2017 than he was in 2016. In 2016, he had a first-team All-Pro year. 2017, he had the distractions, obviously, when you came and you played the Oakland Raiders and you get into the scuffle with Michael Crabtree once again. You get ejected from that game. You get suspended from another game. I think that really tarnished Aqib Talib's finish to 2017.
What about Bradley Chubb, adding him to the defense, and what did you think of the rest of the – Broncos draft, because, you know, that got all the headlines?
You know, I think the Denver Broncos quietly had one of the better drafts this year in the NFL, and I think that arguably this is John Elway's best draft class on paper right now. Obviously, we still have to see the on-field translation, but on paper, John Elway, by a lot of NFL analysts, was graded as, you know, the Broncos were graded as an A on their draft, which, you know, hasn't happened in quite some time. That's been one of John Elway's biggest question marks from a lot of people in the NFL community is, you know, his draft history. Well, I think he did a phenomenal job in 2018. Now, when Bradley Chubb fell to the Denver Broncos at number five, it had to happen. That was the absolute pick that they had to make because, you know, Broncos were anticipating that the Browns with the fourth pick were going to be picking Chubb at that point. And so the Denver Broncos were maybe looking at a Quentin Nelson or, you know, a different type of quarterback or even a Roquan Smith. And when Bradley Chubb fell there, John Elway, everybody's eyes in the media room, they open wide and like, okay, we got to take this guy. So adding him opposite of Von Miller is going to be a big move for the Denver Broncos. You're going to see a lot of versatility out of him. You're going to see him also in a stand-up as an outside linebacker in a 7 technique, and sometimes you're going to see his hand in the dirt in a 5 technique as an end, and you're going to see him and Shaquille Barrett rotate a lot between D end and outside linebacker in different sets. But, you know, that's a huge pickup, you know, more so with, you know, a guy like Chubb. He's tall, he's strong, and he's super physical. Now, Von Miller, he's a speedy, strong guy off the edge. And combining those two together gives Denver the element of having success, because last year in 2017, they didn't really have a very effective pass rush outside of Von Miller because Shane Ray went out with a wrist injury. He was out for a majority of the year till week 8 on Monday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. So Shaquille Barrett was more of an edge rushing, you know, defensive end who's better in the run game than he was at pass rushing the quarterback. So they're going to utilize their strengths a little differently. That's going to be a big pickup. Another guy I'm really excited about that the Denver Broncos picked up, and Brian, you know, I'm sure you've watched him before, is Courtland Sutton out of Southern Methodist University down there in Texas. He's a big, big explosive receiver, in my opinion. You know, I think they struggled last year. SMU didn't really have a quarterback that could really get him the ball as much, but he still made big plays. He still caught a lot of balls, and he still made a lot of touchdown receptions in the end zone. He found ways to make these one-handed catches, and he did a lot with nothing. And adding him to the mix for the Denver Broncos, just another weapon for Case Keenum to throw the ball to. I'm excited about that because the Denver Broncos, outside of having Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, they have struggled with trying to find a guy to be a number three threat that can obviously take the pressure, because you have teams that will bracket coverage both Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, because the Denver Broncos didn't have a number three receiver or a tight end that could really hurt them in the passing game for the last two seasons. Now, adding Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton, Jake Butt from Michigan, coming off an ACL surgery, he's ready to go in training camp as well. And Jeff Hireman, obviously a guy that's been around for the Denver Broncos, adding these weapons, that makes the Denver Broncos a lot more deadlier on offense.
The Texans almost would have been thinking about Paxton Lynch at quarterback when if they hadn't traded up for Deshaun Watson. Is the stock that I have on Paxton Lynch need to be thrown into the garbage, or should I pick it up out of the garbage because it's time to buy low on Paxton Lynch? Is there any hope that that guy can be a good quarterback, or have everybody in Denver given up on him?
You know, this is a very interesting storyline for the Denver Broncos as well. And I would almost hazard a guess and say that maybe you can buy your stock low with Paxton Lynch, but it hasn't worked out in 2 years for the Denver Broncos, Paxton Lynch. There's a lot of pressure coming off as a first-round pick. Denver traded up in 2016 to get him. Now, it was expected he was going to be the guy heading into 2016. Well, Trevor Siemian came out of nowhere, you know, a guy who was never even supposed to even compete for the job. He came in, won the job in preseason. Now, Paxton Lynch has struggled with staying healthy. He also struggled with grasping some of the content of the offense for the Denver Broncos, even under Gary Kubiak and even now under Bill Musgrave a little bit. There's been some questions about his ability to learn a playbook or his desire to learn a playbook for that matter. But, you know, let's go back to Paxton Lynch's strength. Now, he's got some good intangibles. He's a mobile quarterback. He's a big guy, and he does have a big arm. Now, the question with his big arm is, can he be accurate? Can he be consistent? That remains to be seen. Now, heading into training camp this year in just about 12 days from now, you know, the Broncos will get a good look at Paxton Lynch and see if he's going to be a viable option for the future, because he's going to be in a backup quarterback competition with Chad Kelly. So that's going to be a very interesting point. If you can't beat out Chad Kelly, I could imagine that the Denver Broncos might offset him. I think his asking price would be pretty low. It's, you know, but you never know with a former first round pick. It could be a middle of the area type pickup for a team that's willing to trade for him. But if he can't beat out Chad Kelly this year, I would almost hazard a guess and say that this might be the last year for Paxton Lynch in Denver. Now, if he can come out in training camp and compete very well against Chad Kelly, well, the sky's the limit for Paxton Lynch. It's all about his desire, his ability to want to. He's been working really hard this offseason. He's been working with Tom Brady's quarterback coach. And, you know, who knows how it's going to be. But obviously here in about 11 days, we're going to find out in training camp.
Well, I'll let you flip the tables on us. And before I do, I just want to remind our listeners, if you haven't already, follow us on social media, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Make your voice a part of the conversation with us. We would love to hear from you. We want you to be a part of the Locked On Network as well. Well, Cody, what do you got for us? Anything you want to talk about? Maybe Deshaun Watson, perhaps?
Absolutely. So one thing I kind of alluded to earlier is, you know, rising teams in the AFC. When I watched the Houston Texans last year coming into the year, you know, obviously they when they drafted Deshaun Watson, that was a huge pickup for them. I looked at that and I said that's a move that they needed to make. Now, there was a lot of questions due to his knee history, obviously injury history to his knee heading into the draft once they drafted him. But when I started watching Deshaun Watson play, and I'll tell you this, it was against the Patriots, and it was also that game against the Seahawks where the belief was that he originally tore his ACL in that game during a play. Just watching him game and just sitting back and having that focus and having that clutch, he had this clutch factor to him that really impressed me, his ability to run around the pocket, make throws, and obviously him and Deshaun Watkins and Will Fuller, they had a pretty good connection. And then as soon as Deshaun Watson got hurt, things kind of deteriorated a little bit. I know the Texans kind of went back to Tom Savage a little bit, and there were several games I watched where the Texans had a chance to drive late. Tom Savage throws a pick, and you see Bill O'Brien freaking out on the sideline, and it was just a frustrating year, you know, and I kind of want to gauge your guys' perspective on this. Seeing that the start that the Houston Texans had, the promise that they had on the offensive side of the ball, the ability to be as explosive and a little bit more disciplined on the defensive side of the ball. I know Jonathan Joseph had a, I'd say, more improved year, and he's actually played very well for Houston last season. What are the expectations for Deshaun Watson's return? Obviously, having another torn ACL coming off that, that's, I believe, the third torn ACL he's suffered in his career from college to the pros. What is Deshaun Watson's return looking like? I know I saw some progress on Instagram where he was running, he was doing a lot of different things. Can he be the same guy that he was for the Houston Texans before he got injured?
Boy, it would sure be nice, wouldn't it, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I think he's going to return back just fine. You know, he seems like he's training just fine. He's right on schedule, you know, coming back with the Texans. But two ACL surgeries on both knees, you have to be concerned about that. But what I'm really concerned about more is who is going to back him up if he does get hurt. We pretty much are, you know, betting this season on Deshaun Watson being healthy rather than finding someone behind him where we can have some sort of continuity to the season. I really don't like the way they're handling this because Brandon Wheaton honestly is not the answer, and we need to do something about it. And I've talked about it ad nauseum. Show after show, go get Matt Moore. He would work perfect in this offense. So that's what I'm concerned about more. If Deshaun Watson is healthy, he's going to be just fine. There are records that are going to be broken, and we're all going to be smiling happy, you know, happy thoughts. That's pretty much what we're going to have around here in Houston because number four is thriving, and we are rooting for his success. But that is the situation there. We need a good backup quarterback just in case things go awry.
Absolutely.
Cody, I try to tell people that you can't find these backup quarterbacks like Nick Foles just everywhere. I mean, they don't grow on trees.
No, you can't. And that's an unfortunate commodity in the NFL. It's rare you ever find a guy who serves as a backup quarterback. Remember a few years ago, there was Matt Flynn behind Aaron Rodgers, and all of a sudden he got all this money, and it ended up not working out. Then Russell Wilson took over in Seattle for him. You know, it's crazy how it works like that in the NFL sometimes. But, you know, I think having, obviously, Deshaun Watson healthy is huge for the Houston Texans, especially as it pertains to the scope of the AFC and that division that they have with Tennessee and, obviously, the Indianapolis Colts who get Andrew Luck back. It's a tough division. It struggled a little bit last year, but I think the divisions have those runs where maybe for 1 or 2 years, the division overall is not that good. And then all of a sudden you have a year where it's very good, very competitive. And I think that's the crazy thing about the NFL. It changes year in and year out with coaching teams. Now on the side of the quarterback stuff, you know, obviously having DeAndre Hopkins, in my opinion, who's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. I believe he's top three, top two. His unbelievable athleticism, his ability to make these crazy catches. He is a guy, when I look at him, he's a matchup nightmare for a lot of defensive backs when you look at it. But who can take the pressure off DeAndre Hopkins to make every single play? I know Will Fuller's a guy there. The expectations for him, you know, they had them, you know, back when the Denver Broncos were playing the Texans on Monday Night Football and Brock Osweiler was there. Will Fuller was a guy that, you know, Brock Osweiler went to more so than he went to DeAndre Hopkins. Now, when we've seen DeAndre Hopkins have success, you know, usually you have the other guys stepping up as role players. Now, you have DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller. What other wide receiver candidates are on the roster right now that can help take that pressure off of those guys to be the primary go-to guys?
Well, I was out at mini camp and rookie mini camp and all that, and the guy to remember is Kiki QT. He's a slot receiver out of Texas Tech, their fourth-round draft pick. They've been drafting slot receiver after slot receiver. drafting guys in the middle rounds, trying to find somebody to help out DeAndre Hopkins. And I think that could be the guy. And Will Fuller, if Deshaun Watson's the quarterback, Will Fuller's fine. He caught 13 passes, and seven of those were for touchdowns when Deshaun Watson was quarterbacking the Texans and then disappeared when it was Tom Savage. And Brian, you know, I don't know what to say beyond those two guys, but I think those two guys are going to be the guys that help out DeAndre Hopkins a lot this year.
That's right. And you don't count out Bruce Ellington, because I think you can use him in a variety of different situations, you know, especially with him in the slot. Also with punt returns, they tried him a little bit in that area last year, because Bruce Ellington, I think he honestly has a great shot of making this team. But you're right. Kiki Coody is going to be the guy that you're going to keep your eye on. Fourth round pick out of Texas Tech, speedy offense with Cliff Kingsbury. You know, that's his hallmark. That's his, you know, what he does out there. So Kiki is going to fit nicely in here, because that's what we're trying to do. So I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. But like we talked about, you know, I think what was it last week, Rob? Braxton Miller's the odd man out on this. I don't see a way he makes this team with all this talent that's coming in.
Third round pick just 2 years ago, Cody, and he's probably gone.
And that's crazy, because when I watched him against the Denver Broncos, he actually was a very explosive runner. He was a guy when I looked at when he would catch the ball that he made guys miss more so. And he was a matchup nightmare a little bit for, you know, when you drew that, you know, kind of dime linebacker and coverage as well. You know, he's fallen off. But, you know, also the Texans acquired Sammy Coates. They picked him up from the Kansas City Chiefs last year. What is his role as well? Do you see him stepping up and being a guy for the Texans in their offense?
They need another outside guy, and just being at the camp, I just noticed that he was making catches, and there's not many other candidates, and I think he's got a really good shot at being the other wide receiver, and Braxton Miller is on the outside looking in, but I would see him being maybe the other fifth wide receiver in the set. You know, if Will Fuller has injuries, which he's had before, you know, Sammy Coates could definitely be the guy, could give you some speed. And you know, just a lot of it's like with all the Texans positions, it's about health with a lot of the Texans wide receivers. They've got guys all over the place, but definitely in the receiving corps that haven't been able to stay healthy.
When I look at the health side of things real quick, you know, we talked about Broncos, Texans community, you know, obviously connections there. Wes Welker, what has he been like for the team ever since they picked him up and he's been helping out?
They love him. I mean, he's a factor, and you have a guy that's went to Texas Tech. So Kiki Coutee, again, I'm going to say his name. He's going to be able to help somebody like that in the transition, I would assume.
Yeah, Wes, I totally agree. It's just great that he's got, you know, gotten into coaching. I mean, I see him moving up in the ranks. It's just a little too early now for him as he's getting his feet wet. But obviously he is getting the respect, especially from the wide receivers, because he can teach him a few things. And for the most part, DeAndre got an opportunity to play against him. So how about that? He's now your coach. So I love that out of him. But yeah, I agree with Rob. You know, they love him. I don't think there's any ill will. And, you know, he's a former Patriots guy. That's what the staff, Bill O'Brien, he tries to recruit former Patriots or Patriots that are currently on the staff. I mean, they tried to talk to their current personnel director for the GM job. They were trying. That was the latest rumor. But you wonder about those rumors. I think they had Brian Gain in mind the whole time, but they had to make it look like they were looking for somebody. We talked about that too as well.
And absolutely. You know, one thing I want to talk about too, also before we get off air here, is the defensive side of the ball for the Texans. Obviously, some question marks there. Obviously, in the offseason, the Texans decided to part ways with Brian Cushing, who couldn't stay healthy and also had the 10-game suspension for Pete use as well. Who is the guy that can step up at inside linebacker for the Texans? Because that what Brian Cushing's role was for the team was very, very big. Now he just couldn't stay healthy for a majority of his career. Who's going to step up in the absence of Brian Cushing?
That's going to be our second-year player, Zach Cunningham. Yeah, he had a wonderful season last year. Pro Football Focus loved him. Every week he would score in the 80s. And he was just out there very effective. But again, I was worried about his frame being able to, you know, battle with the, you know, the best competition. But he seems to have a technique, and he does it well out there with his tackling. I really do think that Zach Cunningham, this is going to be his coming out year. No sophomore jinx for him, but I think he would be effective at inside linebacker. And Rob, I know where you're going with this, so I'm tossing over to you.
I mean, the only other place to go is Brian Cushing stinks, so they're not going to miss him. They're not going to miss him getting suspended for drugs, and he should have been gone a couple of years ago, to be honest with you, because he's been just kind of a guy most of the second half of his career after those first two, the two injuries in back-to-back years. But, you know, Barnardrick McKinney's really solid at the other middle linebacker position, and Dylan Cole, that's another name to keep an eye on. He was an undrafted rookie last year, looked extraordinary in the time that he got a chance to play, and he got hurt early in the year, but look out for him if you're talking about somebody that's going to come out of nowhere at the linebacker position for the Texans.
Yes, we both love Dylan Cole. Yeah, I knew you were going there, Rob. Yeah, he's been terrific for us, and I hope he continues to blossom. Undrafted free agent, by the way, out of Missouri State. I mean, just phenomenal, just the way we were able to snatch him up. This guy should have been drafted.
Well, even undrafted free agents, we've seen over, you know, the course of this, I think John Elway and the Denver Broncos have had a lot of success in their history with undrafted free agents. Obviously, Chris Harris Jr., you guys like that are on your roster that make big names. So it gives guys opportunities to step up, and I look forward to seeing how they look to obviously replace Cushing. And you know, like you said, he had his inconsistencies. He had his head-scratching moments where you look at him, you're like, what is this guy doing? But he was a big presence at first, and then obviously after his ACL injuries, and I don't think he was ever the same player mentally at that point. I think that really that's why he maybe have gotten into some of those other things. But, you know, health is a big thing for the Houston Texans, as you guys know. What is the status with J.J. Watt? Now, he's been a guy that just hasn't been able to stay healthy over the last couple of years. He starts off very strong, and then, bam, he suffers an injury. And it's unfortunate because he's a great guy, great role model, great player, and he's a guy you want to make the face of your organization. What is the status with him heading into 2018? And are they going to kind of reduce his role a little bit to maybe limit the likelihood of him getting re-injured?
While Deshaun was at least making throws and doing a little bit during OTAs and minicamp, JJ still isn't doing anything, but they think he's going to be ready by the start of the season. It's back and a huge leg injury the last 2 years. Odds are, you know, like we've told our crowd, he's not going to be the same guy. So if they can get 75 or 80% of JJ Watt, that's still pretty dang good. And that can be fine next to Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Merciless. Merciless should be fine. It was torn pectoral. I don't think that's a big deal to recover from 1 year to the next. And he was already ready to go during camp. But with JJ, it's a big question mark. You know, hopefully he's going to be ready for the start of the season.
Well, and even thinking about two opposite of him, you have Jadeveon Clowney, and there's been talks of a possible contract extension for him. And I tell you what, Jadeveon Clowney starts the NFL. It looked rocky. It looked rough. But over the last couple of years, he's put together quite a consistent approach for the Houston Texans, and he's been a tough guy. I remember watching him on that Monday Night Football game. He was a guy that the Denver Broncos wanted to try to run away from because he was so good at collapsing the edge and squeezing down and just blowing running backs up and obviously getting to the quarterback. His play has evolved. I think he's gotten a lot more comfortable. What's the latest word on the contract extension talk with Jadeveon Clowney?
Well, we talked to John McClain, who was the Texans beat writer for the Houston Chronicle. He feels like it's not going to happen. The closer we get to this training camp without anything happening, the less likely I think it is. Right now, it doesn't look good since we're, I don't know, what are we, like 9 or 10 days away? And the thing with Clowney is he just had a little knee deal, so he's going to be fine, they say, but you don't want to exactly throw a bunch of money at a guy until you see him come back off of whatever this knee problem is. And like you said, it was a slow start to his career, but that was mostly because of injuries.
Absolutely. Well, I think also, too, I think it's a smart point because looking at it from a Denver Broncos perspective, they did the same exact thing this year with Shane Ray. Now, they had the option to pick up his fifth year option in his final year of his rookie deal, and they decided to decline it because he's been relatively injured over the last couple of seasons with a wrist injury. You know, he missed the entire 8 weeks of the first half of the regular season last year for the Broncos and heading into training camp this year, the same injury that he had last year. He had to get surgery done again because something wasn't done right in the wrist. So that's going to leave him out for a good half of the first season there. The Denver Broncos actually saved quite a bit of money, and I might even suspect that maybe even the Houston Texans pick up the phone for a guy like Shane Ray if they obviously stall and talks with, you know, Jadeveon Clowney. And like you said, the closer we get to camp, the less likely it is that they pick him up. So they could have an option there. And especially if J.J. Watt's not fully healthy, they could get another guy who's a proven pass rusher in a few years. But the question is health at that point as well. So I look forward to seeing that. Now, before we get off area, there's one big offseason move that we didn't talk about with the Houston Texans that I thought was a phenomenal move for them. I was bummed out for the fans of the Arizona Cardinals, but the Houston Texans received Tyrann Mathieu. Now, he's a guy that also has battled injuries, ACL injuries as well, and obviously departing from, you know, Arizona. Heading into Houston, I feel like this is the perfect opportunity for Tyrann Mathieu to get back on his feet and maybe even revitalize his career a little bit, especially with some of those young defensive players that he has around him. Obviously, Jonathan Joseph being back at corner for the Texans. What are your thoughts on the Tyrann Mathieu addition, and what do you think he can do for the Houston Texans defense?
I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, this was our offseason splash. You know, when I think we weren't going to go anywhere as far as free agency, you know, we did sign, of course, Aaron Colvin, you know, in terms of his abilities over at cornerback. So we have him out there, you know, to help out in the secondary, a badly needed signing. But it wasn't like a splash signing. It was more like he was available and he's pretty good, so let's go in and sign him. But getting the Honey Badger, that put us over the top. It moved the needle. I have my concerns about his health, but again, it's a safe bet because he's only going to make $7 million this year. He accepted a 1-year deal. So for each side, you know, as far as risk, it was a great deal for both ends. But we have a new training staff, and that was talked about in a couple of shows too. We have new training regimen. We have equipment to help them. So hopefully that factors into making sure that these guys stay healthy. Remember that the Texans led the league, and it is a NFL record. We used 77 different players on our roster last season with all the injuries we had.
Oh, my goodness. That's crazy. I mean, I thought the Denver Broncos were injury decimated last year, but that, I mean, they don't come anywhere close to what Houston had to deal with. Yeah. I think the Chargers were the only team, I think, a couple years back that might have been in the same category that Houston was last year. And I think the saying "Houston, we have a problem" was really relevant last year with all the injuries that they've had. Got to drink more milk or something along those lines. But, you know, I think the Houston Texans have a very promising future. And if Deshaun Watson can stay healthy, I really do think that the Houston Texans can be a scary team in the NFL next year. And I'm not talking about 2 years, I'm talking about contributing right away next year. We've seen already what the Houston Texans can look like overall as a team on offense and on defense with Deshaun Watson under center for the Houston Texans. So I look forward to obviously seeing that. And hopefully, you know, when we do these crossover shows that, you know, when we talk about the game afterwards, you know, this season, you know, I'm hoping that Von Miller and Bradley Chubb at least can get to him like 3 or 4 times each. You know, that's just my hope on the back end of things. But, you know, I look forward to obviously doing these shows with you guys here again. I think you guys are doing a phenomenal job giving all these Houston Texans fans the content that is absolutely relevant to the team and stuff that is much needed. You guys talk about the big topics, and you guys are doing a phenomenal job over here at Locked On Texans. And I'm very privileged to join you guys here this evening.
And we'll just tell you that we both feel like that the Texans are Super Bowl contenders if Deshaun Watson is healthy. I mean, that's very simple. And the defense is going to be much better because Romeo's back in charge. Hopefully this injuries that they've had, it's going to be a whole lot better. And just one last thing that is probably worth a reminder since we're doing a Texans-Broncos show, our new training staff is the old Broncos, the head of the training staff is the Broncos guy that they brought in who was considered one of the best in the NFL. And that's why they brought him in, was because those injuries that Brian was just talking about.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, the Houston Denver connections keep on coming. Gary Kubiak, Case Keenum, Wes Welker, and the training staff. I tell you what, there's a lot of connections and a lot of history there. And I'm sure the Denver Broncos and the Texans aren't done willing and dealing with each other just yet.
Yeah, it's probably not. I mean, you know, the other thing it's going to be interesting to see is, you know, we got a game coming up with you guys, and it's going to be a big one. And it's always fun when these two teams meet. It seems like we've had a bunch of primetime games, the Texans and the Broncos, recently. It seems like there's been a lot more than I mean, it just seems like it's been a ton, right?
Absolutely. I tell you what, it's gone by as well. And, you know, when I go back and I look at the Texans-Broncos history a little bit, it's always been tough games. One game I remember that I recall is when you guys had Matt Schaub at quarterback and, you know, on the road at Denver. And, you know, he throws a bomb down deep to Andre Johnson, and Champ Bailey last second gets his fingertips on it. That's always a very big play. And on the same play, I believe Matt Schaub lost part of his ear after being hit by Joe Mays on that play. But, you know, there's always been some very competitive games between these teams. And I tell you what, I look forward to seeing how it unfolds in 2018.
That was the best Matt Schaub game in his history, I would say.
Oh, it was a heartbreaker for me, you know, watching that, especially, you know, when they picked on the other corner opposite of Champ Bailey. You know, you're never accustomed to seeing, you know, the Broncos secondary give up those types of plays. And I believe that was the start of a very, very rough era for the Denver Broncos. Was from that point forward. It was definitely rough. And I tell you what, the last 2 years for the Denver Broncos, 9-7 was rough. 5-11 was very, very difficult last year, especially when you had an 8-game losing streak following a 3-1 start heading into your bye week. And then you drop 8 straight. I tell you what, it was very, very rough. And it's something I never want to experience ever again. And I'm hoping, maybe, you know, I don't even want you know what, I want the Denver Broncos to win every game. Evidently, I know you guys want the Texans to win, but at this point, hopefully when our teams play, you know, maybe it ends in a decision where you have to flip a coin. That's one thing where I do, because always competitive games between these two teams. And I remember last when it was Monday Night Football, on, you know, the Broncos shut the Texans out at that point, but it was still a competitive physical game. And those are the games that fans love. I'm a defensive guy, and I don't know about you guys, but I love hard-hitting defensive action, keeping the offense out of the end zone. I think those are the, you know, the games that are most entertaining to watch. And I tell you what, with an explosive offense, you know, headed by Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins and company, against a very, you know, talented defense on paper with the Denver Broncos right now. Tell you what, that's going to be a fun matchup. And I tell you what, that's going to be our key to the game when the Broncos and the Texans meet that week.
Oh, save it. We got to save it. We still got to do a crossover that week. And a good thing for the fans of the NFL is they don't have to watch Brock Osweiler when these two teams play each other. So.
Hey, the Brock Osweiler experiment is over for the Broncos fans and Texans fans alike. I know they wish they could get some of that $72 million back. They offset that to Cleveland. So, you know, that's another conversation for another day. And you guys might see him when Miami and you guys play as well, which might be unfortunate.
I don't know. He might get a chance to play because, you know, with Tannehill, you know, he'll get hurt at the drop of a hat. You know, the wind blows wrong and he gets hurt or somehow. But, there's a good chance we might see Brock Osweiler, because I do believe we have the Dolphins this year too.
Yep, and Denver does as well, so you never know. Yeah. I think it's going to be a very interesting year. Who knows what storylines are going to play out? I tell you, every single year, there's always a crazy storyline, and I'm not sure what we're going to see this year.
Hey, it's been fun, Cody. I love talking to you about the Broncos. It's real interesting just because these two teams have this great history. It's been a fun conversation. Looking forward to that game for sure. And just want to thank everybody for listening. That's all we got for this one. Thanks for making Locked On Texans a part of your day.
You are Locked On Texans, your daily Houston Texans podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.